darkness. All others follow pack leader. Pack is hungry. Pack must eat.
I've got food for you, Kane said. There's a plaza full of kids. Pack leader hesitated. It's easy, Kane said. You can come with me and take as many kids as you want. Get every one of your coyotes. Bring them all. It's a buffet. Pack leader yipped a command to his pack. The coyotes circled back toward him. Follow us, Kane cried, caught up in it now, eyes wild and excited. We go straight toward the plaza. You go straight at the kids there. It will work perfectly.
The Fire Fist is there?
Kane frowned. Who? Oh, Sam. Fire Fist, huh? Yes, he'll be there, but I'll take care of him. Pack leader seemed dubious. If pack leader is frightened, maybe someone else should be pack leader.
Pack leader, no fear.
Then let's kick, Kane said.
Oh, man,
Howard said.
Oh, God, what happened to York?
He had slipped out of Kane's hideout and made his way to the house he had once shared with Ork. He found his protector there, sitting on a couch that had broken beneath Ork's weight, collapsed in the middle. Empty beer bottles were everywhere. Ork held up a game controller.
My fingers are too big to work this thing.
Ork, man, how did this... I mean, man, what happened to you?
Ork's face was still half his own. His left eye, his left ear, and the hair above it, and all of his mouth were still recognizably Ork. But the rest of him was like some slumping statue made of gravel. He was at least a head taller than he had been. His legs were as big around as tree trunks, his arms as thick as fire hydrants. He had burst through his clothing, which now hung from him, and provided the barest degree of modesty. When he shifted in his seat, he made a sound like wet stones.
How did this happen, dude?
It's a judgment on me,
Ork said flatly.
What's that mean, man?
For hitting Beth. It's God, Howard. It's his judgment on me.
Howard fought the urge to turn and run, screaming. He tried to look at Ork's one human eye, but he found himself looking into the other eye, a yellow oyster beneath a brow of stone.
Can you move? Can you stand up?
Ork grunted and stood much more easily than Howard expected.
Yeah, I still have to be able to get up to pee,
Ork said.
What happens when it spreads to your mouth?
I think it's done spreading. It stopped a few hours ago, maybe.
Does it hurt?
Nah, but it itches when it's spreading.
As if to illustrate, he used one of his sausage-sized stone fingers to scratch the line between his gravel nose and his human cheek.
Heavy as you are, man, you must be pretty strong just to stand up.
Yeah.
Ork dipped his hand into the cooler by his feet and came up with a can of beer. He tilted his head back and opened his mouth. He squeezed the top of the can, and it blew out an eruption of liquid and foam. Ork swallowed what landed in his mouth. The rest dribbled down his face onto his rocky chest.
Only way I can open them now. My fingers are too big to pull the tab.
What are you doing, man? You just been sitting here drinking beer?
What else am I gonna do?
He shrugged his slag-heap shoulders. His human eye was either crying or teared up.
Thing is, I'm almost out of beer.
Man, you have to get back in the game. There's a war coming. You need to be in on it, making your statement, you know?
I just want to get some more beer.
Okay, then. That's what we'll do, Ork. We'll get some more beer.
Stars filled the sky. The moon glinted off the steeple. A coyote howled, a wild ululation, a ghostly cry of despair. In his mind, Sam saw the mutants in the church. He saw Adelio concealed with a handful of trusted kids in the smoked-out ruins of the apartment building. He saw Quinn on the roof with the machine gun he might use or not. He saw the kids milling and lost and scared at the south end of the plaza, and Mary and the little kids still in the daycare, and Dara in the church basement awaiting casualties. Drake had retreated, for now. What would Ork do? Where was Kane? And what would happen in 1 hour when the clock ticked and marked exactly 15 years since Sam had been born, linked, though he hadn't known it, to a brother named Kane? Could he beat Kane? He had to beat Kane. And somehow he had to destroy Drake as well. When Sam stepped outside, took the big jump, poofed, he didn't want to leave Astrid to Drake's mercy. He knew he should be scared of the end, scared of the mysterious process that would, it seemed, simply subtract Sam Temple from the phase. But he wasn't as worried for himself as he was for Astrid. Less than 2 weeks ago, she had been an abstraction, an ideal, a girl he could check out furtively but without ever revealing his own interest. And now, she was almost all he thought about as his own personal clock ticked down toward a sudden and possibly fatal disappearance. How would Kane play it? That's what the rest of his mind turned over and over. Would Kane walk into town like a gunslinger in some ancient cowboy movie? Would they stand at 30 paces and draw? Which would be more powerful? The twin with the power of light, or the twin with the power to move matter? It was dark. Sam hated the dark. He had always known that when the end came for him, it would be in the dark. Dark and alone. Where was Kane? Was Bug watching him even now? Would Adelio do what Quinn could not? What surprise would Kane have up his sleeve? Taylor appeared, standing a few feet away. She looked like she'd just come from an interview with a demon. Her face was white, her eyes wide, glittering in the light of street lamps.
"They're coming," she said.
Sam nodded, braced his shoulders, consciously slowed the sudden sprint of his heart. "Good," he said.
"No, not him," Taylor said. "The coyotes."
"What? Where?" Taylor pointed over his shoulder. Sam spun. They came at a run, full out from two directions, racing straight for the unprotected crowd of children. It was like some classroom nature film, like watching as a lion pride attacked a herd of antelope. Only this herd was human. This herd had no reservoir of lightning speed. Helpless. Panic swept them. They surged toward the middle, kids at the edges seeing their doom approach on swift paws. Sam broke into a run, raised his one good hand, looked for a target, yelled. But then, the loud roar of a car engine. He skidded to a halt, spun again. Headlights raced down the street past the church. a dusty SUV. It slammed into the curb surrounding the plaza, jumped the sidewalk, and came to a shuddering stop that sent up clods of damp dirt. Behind it, other cars, racing. Screams as the coyotes neared the human herd. Sam stretched out his hand, and green fire lanced toward the left side swarm of coyotes. He couldn't fire at the other column. They were blocked by panicky, running children, all now racing toward Sam for protection, and so making it impossible for him to beam.
"Get down, get down, get down!" he yelled. "On the ground!"
But it was useless.
"Save me!"
said Computer Jack, falling from the SUV. An Audi skidded to a stop in front of the church. Someone was standing up in the sunroof. A scream of sheer terror and pain. Someone was down, struggling against a coyote twice his size.
"Adelio, now!"
Sam roared.
"Having a bad night, brother,"
Kane shouted, exultant.
"It's going to get worse."
Kane raised his hands, aimed not at Sam at all. Instead, he directed the impossible energy of his telekinesis at the church. It was as if an invisible giant, a creature the size of a dinosaur, had leaned against the ancient limestone. The stone cracked. The stained glass window shattered. The door of the church, the weak point, blew inward, knocked clear off its hinges.
"Astrid!"
Sam cried. Screams, panicked screams from the plaza, mixed with snarls and wild yelps as the coyotes fell on the children. Suddenly, the impossibly loud clatter of a machine gun. Fire blasted from the roof of the daycare. Adelio, running from the burned building, three others behind him, charging the coyotes. Kane blasted again, and this time the invisible monster, the beast of energy, pushed hard, hard against the front of the church. The side windows, all the ancient stained glass and the new, exploded in a sparkling shower. The steeple swayed.
"How you going to save them, Sam?" Kane exulted. "One more push and it collapses."
Jack at Sam's feet, clutching him, tripping him, strangely strong. Sam fired blindly at Kane as he fell.
"I can save you! Save me!"
Jack pleaded.
"The poof! I can save you!"
Sam fell hard, kicked at Jack's grasping hands, wiggled free, and stood up in time to see the front wall of the church sag and collapse slowly, slowly inward. The roof shuddered and slumped. The steeple teetered but did not fall. But tons of limestone and plaster and massive wooden beams fell in with a crash like the end of the world.
"Astrid!"
Sam cried again, helpless. He ran straight at Kane, ignoring the massacre behind him, blocking the screams and the ravening growls and the staccato of machine guns. He aimed and fired. The beam hit the front of Kane's car. The sheet metal blistered, and Kane climbed awkwardly out through the sunroof, while others Sam didn't care enough to identify bolted through the doors. Sam fired, and Kane dodged. A blast hit Sam, stopped him, as dead as if he'd run into a wall. He searched wildly for Kane. Where? Where? Muffled screams from inside the church joined the background roar, a noise out of a child's hell. High-pitched cries for mother, agonized cries, desperate, pleading. A flash of movement, and Sam fired. Kane fired back, and the statue on the fountain was blown off its pedestal and fell with a splash in the fetid water. Sam was up and running. He had to find Kane, had to find him, kill him, kill him. more machine guns firing, and Adelio's voice yelling,
"No, no, no, stop firing! You're hitting kids!"
Sam rounded the burning Audi, Kane running ahead, leaping a fire hydrant. Sam fired, and the ground under Kane's feet burst into flame and oily black smoke. The pavement itself was burning. Kane went sprawling onto the street, rolled quickly, got to one knee, and Sam took a massive blow that laid him flat on his back, stunned, blood coming from his mouth and ears, limbs all askew, unable... Kane, a wild, bloody, screaming face. Sam felt hatred burn through him and erupt from his hands. Kane jumped aside, too slow, and the scorching light seared his side. Shirt burning, Kane screamed and beat at the flame. Sam tried to stand, but his head was swimming. Kane bolted into the burned-out apartment building, through the same door Sam had entered to try and save the little fire starter. Sam wobbled, but ran after him. Up the stairs and to the scorched hallway, still stinking of smoke. The top floor was a wreckage of burned timbers and asphalt-tiled slopes of roof like children's slides, and fragments of walls and incongruous jutting pipes. A blast, and Sam could actually see the half-wall beside him ripple from the impact.
"Kane, let's finish this," Sam rasped.
"Come get me, brother,"
Kane cried in a pain-squeezed voice.
"I'll bring this place down on us both!"
Sam located the sound of his voice and ran down the hallway, ran beneath the stars, firing the deadly light from his hands. No Kane. A creaking door, still hanging from its hinges, though the wall around it was gone, swung slowly. Sam kicked it, spun, and fired into the room. A charred wooden beam flew through the air. Sam ducked under it. The next one hit his left arm, shattering the elbow. More debris, a torrent of it, drove Sam back. Suddenly, there was Kane, not 10 feet from him. Kane's hands were raised over his head, fingers splayed, palms out. Sam clutched his shattered left elbow with his right hand.
"Game over, Sam,"
Kane said. Something blurred behind Kane, and he reeled. He clutched his skull. Brianna stood over him, brandishing her hammer.
"Run, Breeze!"
Sam yelled, but too late. Even as he staggered backward, Kane fired at point-blank range, and Brianna flew backward into the wall, through the wall. Kane jumped after her through the opening. Sam fired into the wall, burned a hole. Through it, he could see Kane blowing away the next wall. Sam felt the floor buckle beneath him. The building was collapsing. He turned and ran, but all at once the floor was gone, and he was running in midair, falling, and the building with him, all around him, on him. He fell, and the world fell on him. 45. 14 minutes. Quinn watched in frozen horror as the coyotes attacked the children. He saw Sam fire and miss. He saw Sam agonize for a terrible moment as Kane attacked the church. Sam ran toward the church. Quinn shouted,
"No!"
He aimed.
"Don't hit the kids! Don't hit the kids!"
He sobbed and squeezed the trigger, aiming at the mass of coyotes. So many more than before. The coyotes barely noticed him. One fell, twisting like it had tripped, and didn't get up. Then he could shoot no more. The beasts were in with the kids. He ran for the ladder and slid and fell and landed hard in the alley. Run away, his brain screamed. Run from it. He took 3 panicked steps away toward the beach, running toward the beach. But then, as though some invisible force had taken hold of him, he stopped.
Can't run away, Quinn, he told himself. Can't.
And even as he said the words, he was running back into the daycare, pushing past Mary, shielding a child in her arms, past her out to the plaza, wielding the gun as a club now, running and screaming his head off like a lunatic, swinging the gun butt to a sickening crunch on a coyote's skull. Adelia was there, and kids were shooting, and Adelia was shouting, "No, no, no!" And then blood was in Quinn's eyes, and blood was in his brain, and blood was everywhere. And he lost his mind, swinging and screaming and hitting, hitting, hitting. Mary clutched Isabella to her and huddled with John, and the kids cried, hearing the madness outside, the screams and snarls and guns.
Jesus save us! Jesus save us!
Someone was repeating in a racked, sobbing voice, and Mary knew in some distant way that it was her. Drake heard the coyote howl in the night and knew in his black heart what it meant. Enough of licking his wounds. The battle was joined.
Time, he said. Time to show them all.
He kicked his own front door open and marched toward the plaza, shouting, shouting, wishing he could bay at the moon like the coyotes. He heard guns firing and pulled his pistol from his belt and uncoiled his whip hand and snapped it, loving the crack it made. Ahead, 2 figures were moving away from him, also heading for the sound of battle. 2 figures. One seemed impossibly small, but no, it was the other that was impossibly big, sumo big, a shuffling, slumping, thick-limbed creature. The 2 mismatched ones moved into a pool of light cast by a street lamp. Drake recognized the smaller one.
"Howard, you traitor!"
Drake shouted. Howard stopped. The beast beside him kept walking.
"You don't want any of this, Drake,"
Howard warned. Drake whipped him across the chest, tore Howard's shirt open, left a trail of blood that was black in the harsh light.
"You better be on your way to help take down Sam," Drake warned.
The rough beast stopped. It turned slowly and came back.
"What is that?"
Drake demanded sharply.
"You,"
the beast muttered.
"Orc?"
Drake cried, half thrilled, half terrified.
"It's your fault I did it,"
Orc said dully.
"Get out of my way," Drake ordered. "There's a fight. Come with me or die right now."
"He just wants some beer, Drake,"
Howard said placatingly, clutching the wound in his chest, hunched over in pain, but still trying to manipulate, still trying to be clever.
"God's judgment on me,"
Orc slurred.
"You stupid lump,"
Drake said, and whirled his whip hand and brought it down full force on Orc's shoulder.
"Ah!"
Orc bellowed in pain.
"Get moving, you moron,"
Drake ordered. Orc got moving, but not toward the plaza.
"You want a piece of whip hand, freak?"
Drake demanded.
"I'll cut you up."
Astrid felt a crushing weight on her lower back and legs. She was face down, lying on top of little Pete. She was stunned, but had enough presence of mind to understand that she was stunned. She took a deep breath. She whispered,
Petey.
She heard the sound through her bones. Her ears were ringing, muffling sound. Little Pete wasn't moving. She tried to draw her legs up, but they wouldn't move.
Petey! Petey!
She cried. She wiped something out of her eyes, dust, dirt, sweat, and blinked to focus on her brother. She had shielded most of his body from the falling wall, but a chunk of plaster the size of a backpack lay on his head. She bit back a sob. She pressed two fingers against his neck and felt a pulse. She could feel his shallow breathing, the rise and fall of his chest beneath her.
Help!
She croaked, unsure if she was shouting or whispering, unable to hear for the ringing.
Someone help us! Someone help us! Save my brother! Save him!
She pleaded, and the plea became a prayer.
Save Sam! Save us all!
She began to recite from memory a prayer she'd heard once long ago. Her voice was far away. Someone else's voice.
Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our defense against the wickedness and snares of the devil.
She could feel, more than hear, her own sobbing, a racking shudder that twisted the words in her throat. As if in mocking answer to her plea for mercy, a shower of glass and plaster fragments fell around her.
May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And to you, O Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God.
Little Pete stirred and groaned. He moved his head, and she could see the deep gash pushed inward, a cleaver mark in his head.
Cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl about the world, seeking the ruin of souls.
Someone stood on the rubble above her. She twisted her neck and saw, silhouetted against the high ceiling in a sudden flash of green lightning, a dark face.
Amen.
I'm not exactly an angel, let alone an archangel,
Decca said, in a voice Astrid could only just make out.
But I can get this stuff off you.
Kane leapt from the wreckage of the building. He had done it. He had done it. Sam was under the tangled debris, buried, beaten. But Kane could scarcely enjoy the moment. The pain from the damaged left side of his body was shocking. The dangerous green-white light had fused his shirt to his flesh, and the result was beyond any agony he had ever imagined. He staggered toward the ruined church, trying to make sense of the chaos around him. There was no more gunfire, but there were still screams and cries and snarls. And something else. A series of tiny sonic booms, the crack of a bullwhip. Below that, a bass drum keeping a random beat. Kane stopped, stared, momentarily forgetting his pain. On the steps of the town hall, a titanic battle raged between Drake and some rough-hewn monster. Drake cracked his whip hand and fired his pistol. The monster lunged with clumsy blows that missed again and again as Drake danced around, whipping and whipping, and yet not even backing the beast up. The beast swung and missed Drake by inches. The stony fist slammed one of the limestone pillars in front of the town hall. The pillar cracked and almost shattered. Little stone chips flew. Kane's gaze was drawn downward by a snarling, slurring, high-pitched voice.
"Female say pack leader stop,"
pack leader said angrily.
"What?"
Kane could make no sense of it till he saw Diana striding up, dark hair flying, eyes furious.
"I told this filthy beast to stop,"
Diana said, barely controlled.
"Stop what?"
Kane demanded.
"They're still attacking the kids,"
Diana said.
"We've won. Sam is dead. Call them off, Kane."
Kane turned his attention back to the battle between Drake and the monster.
"They're coyotes,"
Kane said coldly. Diana flew at him.
"You've lost your mind, Kane. This has to stop. You've won. This has to stop."
"Or what, Diana? Or what?"
Kane demanded.
"Go get Lana. I'm hurt.
Pack leader, do what you want."
"Maybe this is why your mother abandoned you,"
Diana said savagely.
"Maybe she could see that you weren't just bad. You were twisted and sick and evil."
Kane reacted with sudden violence, forgetting his powers and slapping her hard across the face. Diana tripped backward from the blow and sat down hard on the stone steps. Kane could see her face with sudden, terrible clarity by the glow of a brilliant column of blinding, green-white light. That light could have only one source. The light was like a spear aimed at the sky. It arced upward from the midst of the rubble of the apartment building.
"No,"
Kane said. But the light burned away rubble and debris, all the crushing weight of the collapsed apartment building.
"No,"
Kane said, and the light died, snapped off. Behind him, Drake and Ork carried on their quick and slow, nimble and heavy, sharp and dull battle. But all Kane could see was the blackened, soot-covered, bright-eyed figure who now walked toward him from the rubble. Kane aimed his hands at the shattered wood and plaster of the church front. He threw his hands toward Sam, and a truckload of debris went flying. Sam raised his hands. Green fire exploded chunks of brick and heavy wooden beams. They burned in midair, turning to cinders before they could hit him. Dekka raised the debris off Astrid and Little Pete, but it was no easy thing. Her ability to suspend gravity suspended it under Astrid as well, and she and Little Pete floated up in a spinning galaxy of broken lumber and plaster. Dekka darted a hand in and yanked Astrid out of the suspension zone. Astrid hit the floor, along with Little Pete. Dekka released her hold on the debris, and it slammed down, scarily loud.
"Thanks," Astrid said. "There's a lot of other people trapped in here,"
Dekka said, wasting no time in moving off to help others. Astrid bent down and tried to lift Little Pete. He was limp, just dead weight. She got her arms around his chest and hugged him close, like a too large baby. She hugged him to her and staggered awkwardly from the church, half-dragging him, stumbling across rubble. Lana could heal him, but Lana was gone. All she could think of was to get him to Dara down in the basement. But what could Dara do? Was it even possible to reach the so-called hospital, or had the entrance been blocked by falling debris? For the first time, she realized that the front wall of the church was simply gone. She could see night sky and stars, but she could also see a terrible, green-tinged lightning. Her hearing was returning as the ringing subsided. She could make out animal growls and the sharp crack of a whip and too many voices crying. Suddenly, the debris piled around her began to fly. Astrid dropped to the ground, shielding Little Pete again, still always protecting Little Pete. chunks of wall and shards of wood paneling, and odd steel and wood joints rose like jets taking off from an airport and accelerated crazily, flying in a stream out through the broken church front. The green lightning flashed, and there came a sound of explosions, a roar of explosions, and a brighter light still. The debris stream stopped. Astrid climbed up again, hauling little Pete with her. Someone ran toward her from the street. He stopped, panting, staring, a frightened animal at bay. "Kane," Astrid spat. He did not speak. She could see that he was hurt, in pain. His face was streaked with sweat and dirt. He stared at her like he was seeing a ghost. A dangerous light dawned in his clouded eyes.
"Perfect," he whispered.
Astrid felt herself lifted off her feet. She clung desperately to little Pete, but he slipped from her hands, escaped her clawing fingers, and fell to the floor.
"Come out and play, brother!" Kane shouted. "I have a friend of yours!"
Astrid floated, powerless, helpless, and Kane strode behind her, using her as a shield. Out through the church front, out onto the steps, looking out on a nightmare scene of mad dogs and raging battles. Sam was there at the bottom of the steps. He was bloodied and bruised, and one arm hung limp.
"Come on, Sam! Burn me now!" Kane shrieked. "Come on, brother! Show me what you've got!"
"Hiding behind a girl, Kane?" Sam asked.
"You think you can taunt me?" Kane said. "All that matters is winning, so save it!"
"I'll kill you, Kane."
"No. No, you won't. Not without killing your girlfriend."
"We're both gonna blink out of here in about a minute, Kane. It's over for both of us," Sam said.
"Maybe for you, Sam. Not for me. I know the way. I know the way to stay."
He laughed in wild triumph. Astrid said,
"Sam, you have to do it. Destroy him."
Diana was mounting the stairs.
"Yeah, Sam, destroy me," Kane mocked. "You have the power. Just burn a hole right through her and you'll get me too."
Diana said,
"Kane, put her down. Be a man for once."
"Put her down, Kane," Sam said. "It's the end. 15 and out. I don't know what it is, but it may be death, and you don't want to die with more blood on your hands." Kane laughed mirthlessly.
"You know nothing about me. You didn't grow up not knowing who you were. You didn't have to create yourself out of your own imagination, out of your own will."
"I grew up with no father at all," Sam said, "and no explanation, and no truth. Same as you." Kane glanced at his watch.
"I think time is up for you, Sam. You go first, remember? And here's what I want you to know before you go. I'm going to survive, Sam. I'm going to be here still. Me and your lovely Astrid and all of the fays. All of it mine."
Diana said,
"Sam, the way you beat the poof is..."
Kane rounded on her, raised his hand, and blasted her in mid-sentence. She flew through the air, somersaulted backward, and landed across the street on the grass of the plaza. The effort had distracted Kane. He dropped Astrid. Sam extended his hand, palm out.
46. 1 minute. A clear shot. With a thought,
he could kill Cain. But the world around him faded. Astrid, lying in a heap, seemed bleached, colorless, almost translucent. Cain himself, a ghost. No sound. The screams of children were muted. The battle between Drake and Orc moved in slow motion. The attacks by the coyotes, all of it frame by frame, human and beast and monster. Sam's body was numb, as if it had died and left only his brain still whirring away inside his skull.
"It's time," a voice said. He knew that voice, and the sound of it was a knife in his guts. His mother stood before him. She was as beautiful as she had always been to him. Her hair stirred in a breeze he did not feel. Her blue eyes were the only true color.
"Happy birthday,"
she said.
"No,"
he whispered, though his lips did not move.
"You really are the man now,"
she said, and her mouth made a wry smile.
"My little man,"
she said.
"No."
She stretched out her hand to him.
"Come." "I can't,"
he said.
"Sam, I'm your mother. I love you. Come with me. Mom, just reach out to me. I'm safe. I can carry you away, out of this place."
Sam shook his head slowly, slowly, like he was drowning in molasses. Something was happening to time. Astrid wasn't breathing. Nothing was moving. The whole world was frozen.
"It will be like it was,"
his mother said.
"It was never,"
he began.
"You lied to me. You never told me..." "I never lied,"
she said, and frowned at him, disappointed.
"You never told me I had a brother. You never told..." "Just come with me,"
she said, impatient now, jerking her hand a little like she would when he was a little kid and refused to take her hand to cross the street.
"Come with me now, Sam. You'll be safe and out of this place."
He reacted instinctively. The little boy again. Reacted to the mommy voice. The obey me voice. He reached for her. Stretched his hand out to her. And pulled it back.
"I can't,"
Sam whispered.
"I have someone I have to stay here for."
Anger flashed in his mother's eyes, a green light, surreal, before she blinked and it was gone. And then, out of the bleached, unreal world, Cain stepped into the eerie light. Sam's mother smiled at Cain, and he stared at her wonderingly.
"Nurse Temple,"
Cain said.
"Mom,"
she corrected.
"It's time for both my boys to join me, to come away with me, out of this place."
Cain seemed spellbound, unable to tear his gaze away from the gentle, smiling face, the piercing blue eyes.
"Why?"
Cain asked, in a small child's voice. Their mother said nothing. Once again, for just a heartbeat, her blue eyes glowed a toxic green before returning to cool, icy blue.
"Why him and not me?"
Cain asked.
"It's time to come with me now,"
their mother insisted.
"We'll be a family, far from here."
You first, Sam, Kane said. Go with your mother.
No,
Sam said. Kane's face darkened with rage.
Go, Sam! Go! Go! Go with her!
He was shouting now. He seemed to want to grab Sam physically, push him toward the mother they had not quite shared. But his movements were odd, disjointed, a jerky stick figure in a dream. Kane gave up trying.
Jack told you, he said dully. No one told me anything, Sam said. I have things I have to do here.
Their mother extended her arms to them, angry, demanding to be heeded.
Come to me! Come to me!
Kane shook his head slowly.
No. But you're the man of the house now, Sam,
his mother wheedled.
My little man. Mine.
No,
Sam said.
I'm my own man. And I was never yours,
Kane sneered.
Too late now, mother.
The face of their mother wavered. The tender flesh seemed to break apart in jigsaw puzzle pieces. The gently smiling, pleading mouth melted, collapsed inward. In its place, a mouth ringed with needle-sharp teeth. Eyes filled with green fire.
I'll have you yet!
The monster raged with sudden violence. Kane stared in horror.
What are you?
What am I?
The monster mocked him savagely.
I'm your future. You'll come to me on your own in the dark place, Kane. You will come willingly to me.
No,
Kane protested. The monster laughed, a cruel sound from that piranha's mouth. Slowly, the monster faded. Color bled back into the world around Sam and Kane. Ork and Drake accelerated back to normal speed. The air smelled of gunpowder again. Astrid drew breath. Sam and Kane stood facing each other. The world was the world. Their world. The phase. Diana stared. Astrid gasped and opened her eyes. Kane was quick. He raised his hands, palms out. But Sam was quicker. He leapt toward Kane, stepped inside his reach, and grabbed his brother's head with his good hand. Sam's palm was flat against Kane's temple, his fingers curved into his hair.
Don't make me do this,
Sam warned. Kane didn't try to back away. His eyes were wild with defiance.
Go ahead, Sam,
Kane whispered. Sam shook his head.
No.
Pity?
Kane sneered.
You have to leave, Kane,
Sam said softly.
I don't want to kill you, but you can't be here.
Brianna zoomed up, screeched to a halt, and leveled a gun at Kane.
If Sam doesn't get you, I will. You sure aren't faster than the breeze.
Kane ignored her contemptuously, but he would never get the chance to attack Sam now. Brianna was too fast to defy.
It's a mistake to let me live, Sam,
Kane warned.
You know I'll be back.
Don't. Don't come back. Next time
one of us will kill the other,
Kane said.
Walk away. Stay away.
Never.
Kane said, with some of his old bravado.
Diana,
She can stay here,
Astrid said.
Can you, Diana? Kane asked her. Astrid the genius,
Diana said in her mocking way.
So intelligent. So clueless.
Diana stepped close to Sam, cupped his cheek with her hand, and planted a light kiss on the corner of his mouth.
Sorry, Sam. The bad girl ends up with the bad boy. It's the way the world works. Especially this world.
She went to Kane. She did not take his extended hand, did not even look at him, but walked beside him as he descended the steps. The battle between Drake and Ork had staggered to an exhausted draw. Drake was raising his whip hand once more to bring it down on Ork's pylon shoulders, but his movements were slow, leaden.
"Knock it off, Drake," Diana said. "Don't you know when the fight is over?"
"Never,"
Drake gasped. Kane raised his hand and almost casually pulled the struggling, cursing Drake after him. The coyotes, those still alive, followed them out of town. Adelio raised his gun and took aim at the retreating beasts, human and not. His eyes locked with Brianna's, the two of them ready. Sam said,
"No, man. War's over."
Adelio lowered the gun reluctantly.
"Put it down, Breeze. Let it go,"
Sam said. Brianna obeyed, more relieved than anything. Quinn climbed the steps to stand with Adelio. He was spattered with blood. He threw his own gun down on the ground. He sent Sam a bleak, infinitely sad look. Patrick bounded up excitedly, and with him, Lana.
"Sam, let me see that arm,"
she said.
"No," Sam said. "I'm fine. Go to the others. Save them, Lana." "I couldn't." "Maybe you can. Start with little Pete. He's very important."
Astrid had gone back into the church to find her brother. She reappeared, holding him under the arms, dragging him.
"Help him,"
Astrid begged, and Lana ran to her. Sam wanted to go to Astrid. He needed to. But utter weariness rooted him to the spot. He leaned his good hand on Adelio's strong shoulder.
"I guess we won," Sam said.
"Yeah," Adelio agreed.
"I'll get the backhoe. Got a lot of holes to dig."
Final. The food seemed almost to crush the tables. Turkey and dressing, cranberry sauce, and the biggest collection of pies Sam had ever seen. The tables were set up first at the south end of the plaza, but then Albert realized that people didn't want to be away from the rows of graves at the north end. They wanted to stay near them. The dead were to be included in this Thanksgiving. They ate off paper plates and used plastic forks, sat on the few chairs or on the grass. There was laughter. There were sniffles and tears as well, as people remembered Thanksgiving's past. There was music from a stereo system rigged up by Computer Jack. Lana had worked around the clock for days to heal everyone who could be healed. Dara had been at her side, organizing, prioritizing the worst cases, handing out support and pain pills to those who had to wait. Cookie had missed the fight entirely, but had become Dara's faithful nurse, using his size and strength to lift the injured. Mary brought the prees out for the big feast. She and her brother John prepared plates for them, spoon-fed some of them, and changed diapers on blankets spread on the grass. Ork sat with Howard in a corner by themselves. Ork had fought Drake to a standstill, but no one, least of all Ork, had forgotten Bet. The plaza was a disaster. The burned apartment building was a wreck. The church had only three walls now, and the steeple would probably topple over if there was ever a storm. They had burned the dead coyotes. Their ashes and bones filled several large trash cans. Sam watched it all, standing a little apart, balancing a plate of food and trying not to spill the dressing.
Astrid, tell me if this is crazy. I'm thinking if there are any leftovers, we could send them up to Coates, Sam said. You know, a peace offering.
No, not crazy, she said.
Astrid put her arm around his waist.
You know, I've had this plan in mind for a while, Sam said.
What plan?
It involved you and me just sitting on the beach.
Just sitting?
Well, he says, allowing his elliptical tone to imply any number of things.
Sam smiled. I'm all about elliptical implications.
Are you going to tell me what happened during the big blink?
I am. I will. Maybe not today.
He nodded toward little Pete, who hunched over a plate of food and rocked back and forth.
I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah,
Astrid said shortly. Then,
I think the injury, the blow to his head... Oh, never mind. Let's not talk about Petey for once. Give your speech, and then let's go and see if you even know what elliptical means.
My speech?
Everyone's waiting, she said.
Sure enough, he realized, there were expectant glances in his direction and a feeling of unfinished business in the air.
Got any more good quotes I can rip off?
She thought for a moment.
Okay, here's one. With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds. President Lincoln.
Sam said, yeah, that's totally going to happen. I'm going to give a speech that sounds like that.
They're all still scared, she said.
Then she corrected herself.
We're all still scared.
It's not over, Sam said. You know that.
It's over for today.
We have pie, he agreed.
Then, with a sigh, he climbed up onto the edge of the fountain.
People?
It wasn't hard to get their attention. They gathered around. Even the littlest ones toned down their giggling, at least a bit.
First of all, thanks to Albert and his helpers for this meal. Let's give it up for the true Mac Daddy.
A round of hearty applause and some laughter, and Albert waved sheepishly. He frowned a little, too, obviously conflicted about the use of the Mac prefix in a way that was not approved in the McDonald's manual.
And we have to mention Lana and Dara, because without them, there would be a lot fewer of us here.
Now, the applause was almost reverential.
Our first Thanksgiving in the phase, Sam said when the applause died down.
Hope it's our last,
someone shouted.
Yeah, you got that right, Sam agreed. But we're here. We're here in this place we never wanted to be. And we're scared. And I'm not gonna lie and tell you that from here on, it will all be easy. It won't be. It will be hard. And we'll be scared some more, I guess. And sad. And lonely. Some terrible things have happened. Some terrible things. For a moment, he lost his way. But then he stood up straighter again. But still, we are grateful. And we give thanks to God, if you believe in him. Or to fate. Or to just ourselves. All of us here.
To you, Sam!
Someone shouted. No, no, no. He waved that off. No. We give thanks to the 19 kids who are buried right there. He pointed at the 6 rows of 3, plus the one who started a 7th row. Neat, hand-painted wooden tombstones bore the names of Bet and too many others. And we give thanks to the heroes who are standing around here right now eating turkey. Too many names to mention, and they'd all just be embarrassed anyway. But we all know them. There was a wave of loud, sustained applause, and many faces turned toward Adelio and Decca, Taylor and Brianna, and some toward Quinn. We all hope this will end. We all hope we'll soon be back in the world with people we love. But right now, we're here. We're in the phase. And what we're going to do is work together and look out for each other and help each other. People nodded. Some high-fived. Most of us are from Perdido Beach. Some are from Coates. Some of us are, well, a little strange. A few titters. And some of us are not. But we're all here now. We're all in it together. We're going to survive. If this is our world now, I mean, it is our world now. It is our world. So let's make it a good one. He stepped down in silence. Then someone started clapping rhythmically and saying, "Sam! Sam! Sam!" Others joined in, and soon every person in the plaza, even some of the prees, was chanting his name. Quinn was there, and Adelio and Lana. Sam said to Quinn, "Would you do me a favor and keep an eye on little Pete?"
"No prob, brah."
"Where are you going?" Adelio asked.
"We're going to the beach."
Sam took Astrid's hand.
"You want us to come?"
Adelio asked. Lana put her arm through his and said,
"No, Adelio, they don't."
The boy walked stiffly, favoring the half-healed burn on his side. The coyote walked just ahead, leading the way through the desert. The sun set to the west, sending long shadows from boulders and brush, painting the mountain's face an eerie orange.
"How much farther?"
Kane asked.
"Soon,"
Pack Leader said.
"The darkness is near."
This concludes Gone by Michael Grant. Narrated by Kyle McCarley. Copyright 2008 by Michael Grant. This unabridged audiobook is produced by arrangement with HarperCollins Publishers and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.